Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. My name is Zach Ryland, and today we're reading through The Messenger. This is the issue printed on September 6th, and if you're joining us, it's either around 6 o'clock in the evening on Sunday, September 8th, or if you're catching the re-airing of this, it is early in the morning on September the 9th. So thanks again for joining us and inviting us into your homes. Let's get started today with an article from the editor, Laura Keener. This is entitled, Bishop Foyes Asks High School Seniors to Witness to the Faith, Leave a Better World for Future Generations. On the feast of St. Gregory the Great, September 3rd, Bishop Roger Foyes celebrated Mass for over 700 high school seniors at the Cathedral Basilica of the Assumption in Covington. The annual Senior Mass brings together all the seniors of the 9 Catholic high schools in the Diocese of Covington. About 25 priests, pastors, high school chaplains, and pastoral administrators celebrated. Michael Kleins, superintendent of schools, and a representative from each of the high schools opened the Mass with a call to worship. St. Pope Gregory the Great, Bishop Foyes said in his homily, referred to himself as servant of the servants of God. He also talked to the students about the conversion of St. Paul, patron of the diocese, and how saints were fearless preachers of the faith. Quote, someone who's come to know Jesus Christ as the Savior of the world and as our Savior, someone who has come to faith, can't help but want to share that faith with others, said Bishop Foyes. It's a precious gift that God has given us. And like St. Paul and Pope St. Gregory the Great, faith has a burning effect in us to share that faith with others. Every person who has been given the gift of faith is called to live that faith and to spread that faith to others. That includes every single person in this church today. All of us are called to make a difference for good, end quote. Bishop Foyes shared with the students his disappointment that the generations before them are handing on to them a society that is increasingly becoming godless and a church that is wounded. But, he said, they can find hope in God's promise of the Holy Spirit to lead them. Every generation has a challenge, he said. Your challenge is to make a difference for good, to bring God's people back, to change the hearts and lives of others by your own witness to the faith. The challenge, Bishop Foyes said, is not a future challenge, but begins now. You seniors will have a profound effect on the underclassmen in your school who, in many cases, will want to emulate you. What does that mean? How will they act? How will they talk? How will they treat each other? A lot of that depends on you. What you think and what you say and what you do and how you act and how you treat each other could change the world. You could leave the generations following you a better world, a better country, a better community, and a better church than we are leaving you. Every generation has its challenge. This challenge is yours. Bishop Foyes ended his homily in gratitude for the sacrifices of parents, benefactors, and all those working in Catholic education in the diocese. Quote, we have a remarkable Catholic school system in our diocese for which many people have sacrificed and continue to sacrifice, Bishop Foyes said. Your parents must really and truly love you to sacrifice to give you a thorough Catholic school education. I can say with confidence that there are certainly alternatives to Catholic schools, but you will never ever find a substitute. Never. You have had the full benefit of a Catholic school education, and for that you should thank God, thank your parents, and the administrators, staff, faculty, and the many, many benefactors who, for 160 years, have sacrificed to provide you this Catholic school education. After Mass, President Joseph Chilo from Thomas More University presented the 2019 Thomas More University Diocese Excellence in Teaching Award to 4 high school teachers. And let's move now to just talk about those 4 high school teachers. This also comes to us from Laura Keener, the editor, and it's entitled 4 High School Teachers Awarded for Excellence in Teaching. Following the annual Senior Mass on September 3rd at the Cathedral Basilica of the Assumption in Covington, Thomas More University President Joseph Chilo announced 4 high school teachers as recipients of the annual Thomas More University and Diocese Excellence in Teaching Award. This year's awardees are Sarah Bowers from St. Patrick High School in Maysville, Joe Conanier from Villa Madonna Academy in Villa Hills, Anne Maloney from St. Henry District High School in Erlanger, and Nancy Stratman from Notre Dame Academy in Park Hills. Bishop Roger Foyes and Michael Kleins, the superintendent of Catholic schools, distributed the awards. The purpose of the Excellence in Teaching Award is to recognize quality teaching in secondary education classrooms in the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Covington. Recipients are recognized for their leadership and dedication to Catholic schools and celebrate teachers whose examples inspire other teachers to excel in the education profession. The award promotes a collaborative relationship between post-secondary educators and the local Catholic community of educators and learners. Quote, "The collaboration is important because it demonstrates and supports a partnership among high school and university educators to realize the shared goal of learning that promotes moral values while providing students with high-quality academic and extracurricular activities. In addition to teaching English to students in grades 7 through 12, Sarah Bowers is a mentor and coach. Ms. Bowers serves as the academic team coach for both middle school and high school, and is the executive producer for the student musicals each year. She also serves as the ninth grade homeroom sponsor, National Honor Society advisor, and student council advisor. In her nomination, students consider Ms. Bowers to be a hard and strict teacher, and each of them work hard to do what she asks. As a result, each student achieves so much more than they ever expected of themselves. A parent shared that Ms. Bowers is the teacher that she seeks out for advice. Other parents like that Ms. Bowers demands excellence of herself and her students. Joe Conadier teaches AP Human Geography, AP Psychology, Sociology, and World History at Villa Madonna Academy. He's also the track and field coach and serves as the Dean of Academics. In Mr. Conadier's nomination, it was noted that Benedictine values are what lie at the heart of everything he does. In his supporting role as the Dean of Academics, he's a collaborative administrator who successfully oversees all areas related to academic development. Mr. Cordendier is always the first teacher to implement new technology and to teach the faculty about new technology. Ann Maloney teaches biology, anatomy, and physiology at St. Henry District High School. She's also the science department chair, moderator of the Healthcare Careers Club, and the coordinator of the new teacher mentoring program. Ms. Maloney is described in her nomination as, quote, "the very definition of a fantastic teacher. Her God-given ability to nurture each student both academically as well as emotionally is something all of us strive for. She sets high expectations for her students, and in return, her students meet those expectations." Notre Dame Academy's Nancy Stratman teaches history, is the moderator for the Rho Kappa National Society's or Social Studies Honor Society, and serves as the assistant archivist. She is described as having the unique ability to make history and current issues real to her students, and develops lessons that require critical thinking while exploring all sides of an issue. Ms. Stratman's faith and commitment to the mission of Notre Dame Academy is an example for all faculty and staff. She's an outstanding Catholic educator because of her dedication to her students, her commitment to her profession, and devotion to her faith. She leads the Morning Rosary, serves on the Campus Ministry Committee, and serves as the Eucharistic Minister. "Congratulations to this year's recipients," said President Chollio. "As always, our students greatly benefit from your dedication and care as educators in their Catholic education." Just a great honor there for those four teachers and educators in the way that they're really investing in the students of tomorrow and the adults that will guide our communities going forward. We're going to switch now to the commentary section. This comes to us from Father Ron Rollheiser, and this is A Lesson in Aging. "We live in a culture that idealizes youth and marginalizes the old. And as James Hillman says, the old don't let go easily either of the throne or the drive that took them there. I know, I'm aging. For most of my life, I've been able to think of myself as young. Because I was born late in the year, in October, I was always younger than most of my classmates. Graduated from high school at age 17, entered the seminary at the tender age, was ordained to the priesthood at age 25, did an advanced degree within the next year and was teaching graduate theology at age 26, the youngest member of the faculty. I was proud of that, achieving those things so early. And so I always thought of myself as young, even as the years piled up and my body began to betray my conception of myself as young. Moreover, for most of those years, I tried to stay young too in soul, staying on top of what was shaping youth culture, its movies, its popular songs, its lingo. During my years in seminary, and for a good number of years after ordination, I was involved in youth ministry, helping give youth retreats in various high schools and colleges.
At that time, I could name all the popular songs, movies, and trends, speak the youth's language, and I prided myself in being young. But nature offers no exemptions. Nobody stays young forever. Moreover, aging doesn't normally announce its arrival. You're mostly blind to it until one day you see yourself in the mirror, you see a recent photo of yourself, or you get a diagnosis from your doctor, and suddenly you're hit on the head with the unwelcome realization that you're no longer a young person. That usually comes as a surprise. Aging generally makes itself known in ways that have you denying it, fighting it, and accepting it only piecemeal with some bitterness. But that day comes round for everyone when you're surprised, stunned, that what you're seeing in the mirror is so different from how you've been imagining yourself, and you ask yourself, is this really me? Am I this old person? Is this what I look like? Moreover, you begin to notice that young people are forming their circles away from you, and that they're more interested in their own kind, which doesn't include you. And you look silly and out of place when you try to dress, act, and speak like they do. There comes a day when you have to accept that you're no longer young in the world's eyes, nor in your own. Moreover, gravity doesn't just affect your body, pulling things downward, so too for the soul. It's pulled downward along with the body, though aging means something very different here. The soul doesn't age, it matures. You can stay young in soul long after the body betrays you. Indeed, we're meant to always be young in spirit. Souls carry life differently than do bodies, because bodies are built to eventually die. Inside of every living body, the life principle has an exit strategy. It has no such strategy inside a soul, only a strategy to deepen, grow richer, and more textured. Aging forces us, mostly against our will, to listen to our soul more deeply and more honestly, so as to draw from its deeper wells and begin to make peace with its complexity, its shadow, and its deeper proclivities. And the aging of the body plays the key role in this. To employ a metaphor from James Hillman, the best wines have to be aged in cracked old barrels. So too for the soul. The aging process is designed by God and nature to force the soul, whether it wants to or not, to delve ever deeper into the mystery of life, of community, of God, and of itself. Our souls don't age like a wine. They mature. And so we can always be young in spirit. Our zest, our fire, our eagerness, our wit, our brightness, and our humor are not meant to dim with age. Indeed, they're meant to be the very color of a mature soul. So, in the end, aging is a gift, even if unwanted. Aging takes us to a deeper place, whether we want to go or not. Like most everyone else, I still haven't made my full peace with this, and would still like to think of myself as young. However, I was particularly happy to celebrate my 70th birthday 2 years ago. Not because I was happy to be that age, but because after two serious bouts with cancer in recent years, I was very happy just to be alive and wise enough now to be a little grateful for what aging and a cancer diagnosis has taught me. There are certain secrets hidden from health, writes John Updike. True. And aging uncovers a lot of them because, as a Swedish proverb puts it, afternoon knows what the morning never suspected. Father Ron Rollhauser is a theologian, a teacher, and an award-winning author, and is also the president of the Oblate School of Theology in San Antonio, Texas. Gosh, really touching there. Switching now to another commentary, this is called Common Sense, and it's brought to us from Ray Smith. Somewhere along the way, I read this absolutely dead brilliant obituary printed in the London Times. It said, quote, "Today, we mourn the passing of an old friend, Common Sense, who has been with us for many years. No one knows for sure how old he was, since his birth records were long ago lost in bureaucratic red tape. He will be remembered as having cultivated such valuable lessons as knowing when to come out of the rain, why the early bird gets the worm, that life isn't always fair, and maybe it was my fault." Common Sense lived by simple, sound financial policies, like don't spend more than you earn, and reliable strategies. Adults, not children, are in charge. His health began to deteriorate rapidly when well-intentioned but overbearing regulations were set in place, such as reports of a 6-year-old boy charged with sexual harassment for kissing a classmate, teens suspended from school for using mouthwash after lunch, and a teacher fired for reprimanding an unruly student, only worsened his condition. Common sense lost ground when parents attacked teachers for doing the job that they themselves had failed to do in disciplining their unruly children. It declined even further when schools were required to get parental consent to administer sun lotion or an aspirin to a student, but could not inform a parent when a student became pregnant and wanted to have an abortion. And common sense lost the will to live as the churches became businesses and criminals received better treatment than their victims. Common sense took a beating when you couldn't defend yourself from a burglar in your own home and the burglar could sue you for assault. Common sense finally gave up the will to live after a woman failed to realize that a steaming cup of coffee was hot. She spilled a little in her lap and was promptly awarded a huge settlement. Common sense was preceded in death by his parents, truth and trust, by his wife, discretion, by his daughter, responsibility, and by his son, reason. He is survived by 5 stepchildren. I know my rights, I want it now, someone else is to blame, I am a victim, and pay me for doing nothing. Not many attended his funeral because so few realized he was gone. If you still remember him, pass this on, and if not, join the majority and do nothing. But first, please give attention to this example of common sense in action, gleaned from the internet's account of a college teacher's lesson in life presented to his class in Philosophy 101. After a brief good afternoon, everyone, the professor lays a large mason jar on his desk and he waxes profoundly, quote, "We all have this one life to live, a fleeting shadow amongst all else that exists in this universe. We have the ability to accomplish anything, truly anything, if we use our time wisely." That being said, he fills the empty jar with golf balls and asks, "Is this jar full?" A resounding yes fills the classroom. He produces a pouch filled with pebbles and dumps them into the jar. "Is it full now?" he asks. Another boisterous yes ricochets off the walls. Like a deft magician, he procures a cup of sand, pours it up to the jar's rim, shakes it down, and says, "How about now?" "Is the jar full now?" "Yes," fills the room once more. Then, voila, the professor puts 2 bottles of beer on the desk. Puzzled, looks fill the room, accompanied by a smattering of chuckles. He carefully pours some beer in the jar, all the way up to the top. "Carry on," he says. "Now I want you to recognize this jar represents your life. The golf balls are the important things, your family, your friends, your health, your passion. The pebbles are your other things, your car, your job, your home. The sand is everything else. It's just the small stuff. Now, if you put the sand in the jar first, you won't have room for the pebbles or the golf balls." With that, the smiles and the laughter disappear. Serious looks and undivided attention prevail. "The same is true in your life," the teacher persists. "If you spend all your time on the small stuff, you won't have time for the really important things that matter to you. Pay attention to the things that are critical to your happiness. Take care of the golf balls first, the really important things. Set your priorities, because everything else is just sand." "Professor," someone asks, "what does the beer represent?" The professor smiles and says, "I'm glad you asked me that. No matter how full your life may seem to be, there's always room for a couple beers with a friend." Ray Smith is a commissioned lay pastoral minister for the Diocese of Covington. And just switching over here, another commentary, this one comes to us from Sister Constance Veit, and it's entitled "The Language of Love and Service." "During a recent Catholic conference, I saw a scripture quote on a poster that read, 'Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who calls you to account for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and reverence,' coming from 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. A series of talks by Catholic theologians and public figures drove home for me just how applicable these words are today. From the recent scandals in the church to the continued legal threats to religious liberty, traditional marriage, and family, and the dignity of human life, the times in which we are living seem catastrophic for Christians. Is there any hope for the future of the church in Western societies like ours? What are we ordinary Catholics to do? As I pondered these questions, the words of St. Peter provided me with 2 takeaways. First, we should not be afraid to speak up for Christ and the gospel in the public square. And second, we will be able to make a difference only if we do so with kindness and humility. St. Peter advised the early Christians to always be prepared, which presupposes that we have done our homework. A Dominican speaker at the conference emphasized the need for serious study, because standing up for our Catholic faith today requires intelligent answers. But he added that effective evangelization is not purely a matter of intellectual effort. It involves both knowing and authentically living our faith. Actions speak louder than words, and when we do speak, our personal witness of grace can touch hearts more effectively than theological treatises. I think this is what St. Peter meant when he spoke about the hope that is in you. The hope is not something remote or academic. It is the living presence of Christ in our hearts. We all share in the pledge of an imperishable inheritance by virtue of our baptism, but this living hope is not bestowed upon the Church as a corporate body. It is a promise given to each of us individually, as a beloved son or daughter of God. Christ is in you and in me, for in each of us are hope of glory, coming from Colossians chapter 1, verse 27. If we're tempted to become discouraged in the face of so many threats to our Catholic faith, perhaps it is because we have not yet taken full ownership of the hope that is in us. Sister Constance Veit is Director of Communications for the Little Sisters of the Poor. Switching over now, we've got some news coming in, and this comes to us from the Catholic News Service, from Angeliska Ruck. This comes to us out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and is entitled, Catholic Officials Say the State's Green Burial Laws Might Not Respect Bodies. When Archdiocesan Catholic Cemeteries Director Peter Nobis first heard composting might emerge as an eco-friendly burial alternative, he thought it was a crazy idea. Quote, I thought that would never be approved, said Nobis. Then it was. Washington became the first U.S. state to approve composting human remains on May 21st. The legislation, which will take effect by 2020, allows the body of a deceased person to be mixed with materials like wood chips and straw in a controlled environment to be composted. It also now allows alkaline hydrolysis, a process whereby a body is dissolved with chemicals and which is already legal in 19 other states. Quote, there are some more environmentally friendly and safe ways of disposing of human remains besides burial and cremation, Washington State Senator Jamie Peterson of Seattle said before the bill became a law. He called recomposition and alkaline hydrolysis wonderful options that can show the world a better way of dealing with this universal human experience of death. But Nobis, who runs the Gardens of Gethsemane Cemetery just north of the border in Surrey, British Columbia, said these alternatives might make a smaller footprint on the environment, but do not offer a body the dignity it deserves. Quote, we don't dispose of human remains, he said. We take care of them, in great reverence, in anticipation of the resurrection. He added, while it might sound romantic to use the resulting compost to plant a tree in memory of a deceased family member, Catholics should know it does not comply with church teaching. Quote, this ties in with church teaching not to scatter cremated remains, he said. Cremated remains are the body in another form, and we're called to keep them together and bury them in a place of reverence. We don't scatter remains or split them among family members. In May, Catholic bishops in Washington responded to the new legislation with a statement reminding area Catholics that bodies of deceased loved ones are to be treated with respect. Quote, in memory of the death, burial, and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ, the mystery that illuminates the Christian meaning of death, burial is above the most fitting way to reflect faith and hope in the resurrection of the body. While the Church allows cremation, they wrote, ashes must be treated with the same respect as a body for burial and be kept in a sacred place. Alkaline hydrolysis and recomposition, they said, need more research and peer-reviewed studies to prove they're good for the environment and for public health. They expressed concern that alkaline hydrolysis could have a negative impact on municipal water systems because of the chemicals involved, and they criticized the legislation for not including screening to prevent dangerous pathogens from being released into the environment. Quote, the legislation failed to ensure that the emerging technologies show sufficient respect for the deceased body, the bishop said. Nobes agrees with Washington's bishops, but he has seen a growing interest in eco-friendly burial options on Canada's west coast. For example, Royal Oak Burial Park in Victoria offers environmentally friendly burial options, where bodies are wrapped in a shroud made of natural fibers instead of a casket. People are conscious of the impact their burial choices have on the environment, he said. It will take years to come up with an eco-friendly burial option in British Columbia that follows all local regulations and complies with Catholic teachings about dignified burial. But Nobe said he's working on it. Quote, we intend to offer green burial options in the future, he said. We are researching our options right now. Interesting how the times and our focuses can change practices like burial. It'll really be interesting to see where that kind of research in British Columbia turns out and what the future might hold. I want to switch now to another article, and this will probably be the last one that we have time for. This is a focus now on how gun laws are having an impact and how they relate back to the Catholic faith. So this is entitled, Parkland Survivors, U.S. Bishops, Have Much in Common on Gun Violence. This comes to us from Matt Pattison from the Catholic News Service, and it comes out of Washington. After the mass shootings that killed 17 people at Majory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, on February 14th of 2018, this century's Valentine's Day massacre, students who have survived the attack have made the case for stricter gun laws, organizing under the banner March for Our Lives. On August 21st, March for Our Lives issued a 4,400-word policy platform, with the key word being change. The word serving as an acronym for each of the 6 points the organization wants to see enacted. Change the standards of gun ownership, which includes a national licensing and registry system, a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, policies to disarm gun owners who pose a risk to themselves or others, and a national gun buyback program to cut the number of firearms in circulation by 30%. Halve gun deaths within 10 years, which March for Our Lives characterized as declare a national emergency around gun violence and announce an audacious goal to reduce gun injuries and death by 50% in 10 years, thereby saving up to 200,000 American lives. Accountability. For the gun lobby and industry, which includes re-examining the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Second Amendment in the District of Columbia v. Heller case, which allows individuals to legally bear firearms without requiring service in a militia, plus instituting both Federal Election Commission and Internal Revenue Service investigations into the National Rifle Association. Name a national director of gun violence policy who reports directly to the president and works on gun issues with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Centers for Disease Control, including a $250 million down payment to the CDC on research into gun violence. Generate community-based solutions, such as urban violence reduction programs, suicide prevention programs, domestic violence prevention programs, mental and behavioral health service programs, and programs to address police violence. And lastly, E, empower. Empower the next generation through automatic voter registration at age 18 and the creation of a Peace Corps-styled safety corps for gun violence prevention. Younger generations are disproportionately affected by gun violence, March for Our Lives said. They should have a say in how their country solves this epidemic. The U.S. bishops' own pronouncements on America's gun culture and the changes the bishops seek do not have the specificity of March for Our Lives, but the bishops have argued for stricter gun measures in the United States since before the Parkland survivors were born. Commentating on gun violence in their 1990 statement, New Slavery, New Freedom, a pastoral message on substance abuse, the bishops said, the widespread use of handguns and automatic weapons in connection with drug commerce reinforces our repeated call for effective and courageous action to control handguns, leading to their eventual elimination from our society. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today. I want to just thank you again so much for tuning in and listening. My name has been Zach Ryland, and this has been The Messenger from September 6th. We wish you a wonderful rest of your evening, and hope that you take care of yourself. We'll see you again this time next week.